is VSiN Prime Time. Live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It might be the final night of the NBA season. And that would be a long, boring summer ahead if that's the case. But we should have a great game tonight. Will Hill, Matt Youmans, VSiN Prime Time. I'm downtown Las Vegas at the Circus Sportsbook. Will at his estate in Connecticut. Will, the Yankees score 7. They stopped their 6-game losing streak. And we have game 6 of the NBA Finals on tap tonight. Are you fired up?
Yeah, crazy day in baseball. The Rockies losing, the Yankees win. The baseball world is upside down with how it's been recently. But,
right.
You know, excited here to talk about this NBA game. We're either going to get a game 7 or we're going to crown a champion. We were in the same position the other night in the NHL. The Oilers did not cooperate and give us much drama. So we'll see if the Pacers can do a little better, put up a little bit more of a fight here and either force a game 7 or at least come close and give us some excitement here. Down the stretch, about an hour and a half away from tip-off, should be a fun night.
Right here at Circa, OKC down to a 5.5-point favorite. Total 222.5, and we'll talk about this game a little bit more here in a couple minutes. Let's get to baseball and what's happening and what's about to start happening. Will Hill, we talked about the Yankees winning 7-3 over the Angels. They stopped their 6-game losing streak. And Aaron Boone said, hey, you know, you're going to go through these stretches in the baseball season where you lose a few in a row and blah, blah, blah. It's not a few in a row. You lost 6 in a row. You got swept by the Red Sox and you lost 3 in a row to the Angels. Don't try to sweep it under the rug like it's no big deal. It's just baseball. Well, the Yankees busted out today. I received a text message from Will Hill last night and said the Yankees are going to bust out tomorrow. You predicted it. You called your shot. Did you bet it accordingly?
No, and some of that was tongue-in-cheek right after the Yankees lost again last night, another lackluster effort. What was it, 3 hits all night, even though they did score a couple runs. I said, the Yankees are due, sarcastically, because like we've talked about, you know, due can be a very dangerous word. They were due on Monday. They were due on Tuesday. They were due again on Wednesday. I talked to a couple of buddies of mine saying, man, I don't usually chase in baseball, but the Yankees have got me this week and thinking they're not going to lose to the Angels again. And again, right. That's a very dangerous thought process, but finally, the due theory comes through. They're able to win. They're able to pull away at the end. I know you were thinking of playing the run line. I'm not sure if you ended up getting there. But look, as much as Boone can sweep it under the rug, say, I lost a few in a row, we go through slumps. That's true. Teams do go through slumps on offense. And it's like they all went cold at the same time. The thing that bothered me, we talked about this the other night, and they did more of it today, is the stupid baseball, the stupid base running. Making the last out at third, making the first out at third, not getting bunts down, bad defense. That stuff, that's a symptom of just poorly run teams. And they did it again today. Anthony Volpe, who's not a good base runner, despite the fact that he can run, makes the last out trying to steal third base. I mean, just stupid stuff time and time again. And that stuff, defense, base running, bunting, just situational baseball. When you get in the playoffs, that stuff's going to get you beat. It got them beat last year. And, okay, they won a game today, but they continue to just play brain-dead baseball.
Volpe made a big error in the Wednesday game. I think it was Wednesday night. Volpe made the big error to allow the go-ahead run to score for the Angels. And today, a base-running mistake. Like I said, the Yankees, poor fundamental baseball, but they get the win. We're going to have all summer to harp on what the Yankees can do wrong. So we're not going to dwell on it too much tonight. But the Yankees do get a win, 7-3. How about -300? Big number today. Obviously, the bookmakers knew that a lot of people would be betting this game as if the Yankees were due. And that got bet up. There was a lot of steam on the Yankees, actually, in the market, too. So a lot of bettors did jump on that. Here at Circa, it opened -255 and closed -303. So pretty big move to the Yankees today. That finally pays off, but probably a lot of bettors who had lost on the Yankees in the previous 5 days or so. All right, how about if you played a parlay betting on Tariq Skubal and betting on Paul Skeens? Did you think about doing that today? A Tigers-Pirates parlay within the same doubleheader.
I didn't. I didn't think of it just because the Pirates have been such a bad team. I think that the Tiger line was similar to the Yankee line, like $3. So that's just, I know people can play, and if you win, you don't pay the juice, all those things. But I thought that was expensive. They didn't play either game. It's unfortunate that both these guys pitching same day, same ballpark, that they couldn't pitch against each other. I was fascinated to watch that matchup. Maybe we'll see it in the All-Star game here in a month or so. and what that, what would that total look like? Five and a half? I mean, how low can you make it with those two guys? But form holding here is the Pirates lead the Skeens game. The Tigers won the Scoobal game. So unfortunate we couldn't see them square off. But I don't know. Did you play anything? Did you have any thought of playing either one?
Yeah, again, there was a lot of baseball I looked at and didn't pull the trigger. I was thinking Tigers run line with Skeens in game two. Because like you said, Scooball up around minus 340. You can't play that. You got to play, lay the run and a half if you're even going to play it. Tigers win that game 9-2. Andrew Haney was on the opposite side for the Pirates, and that's what made it more attractive. You figured the Tigers were going to hit Haney, and they did. Scooball was not as great as he usually is, but didn't need to be today. Paul Skeens right now up 4-0, but it's early, so you can't catch that parlay yet. 4-0 in the third inning. Pirates get the lead. Skeens went off about minus 125, total of 7 in the second game of that doubleheader today. Also, looked at Logan Webb. You know, you and I have talked about this a lot. Yeah. Logan Webb splits at home. He's a bet-on pitcher. On the road, a lot of times a fade. Well, today Logan Webb is really good. Didn't get much run support, but barely got enough. Giants 2-1 over the Guardians in San Francisco. That number overnight here at Circa was minus 168 and closed 185. So steam on the Giants, and they get there, but barely with the 2-1 win over the Guardians. Will, how about the Mets and the Braves? Going to start here in about 10 minutes in Atlanta. I know I saw on the VSIM Pro page you were on the Mets yesterday. It did not work out. How about Holmes and Strider as the pitching matchup with the Braves at minus 135, total of 9. Did you do anything with the Mets-Braves game today?
I did, and I thought the Braves were a little bit inflated yesterday, around $1.90. I just thought, you know, Blackburn, you know, his two starts since coming back off the IL were against the Dodgers at Colorado, so maybe his look, his expected ERA was better, but ended up being a loser. I'm not going back on the Mets here. If I had to, I'd probably just take the plus money, but it's the you know, same line of thinking with the Yankees, where you could sit here and say these teams on losing streaks are due, but I don't like backing teams on losing streaks. Strider was good last time out against the Rockies, yeah. But I thought in general, or I think in general, he's just been overvalued from start to start. He has not been great. He has not pitched up to the Spencer Strider standards that we've expected of him. So it'd be Braves or it'd probably be Braves or nothing for me. Not now that I think it through, talk it through. I didn't bet it. But I will say, big picture here, the Mets are doing something dangerous. They are letting these Atlanta Braves get off the mat. That's always been a tough place for them to play. And you're going to let this team hang around. That's a very dangerous thing because they have a lot of talent. Pitching's not as great as it's been in past years, but Ronald Acuna, since coming back, has been about as good as anybody in baseball with the power, the speed, hit a homer on the first pitch of the game yesterday. So Braves lurking, threatening to make a rally here, and plenty of time left for them to get back in the mix. So that would be my takeaway. But nothing I played here. Was this a game you looked at, or were you interested in all?
I was interested in the Braves, if anything. You know what? Let's talk about this game a little bit later on. We got plenty of time to hit on it. Right now, we have to get to the main event.
The lights are on, and the stakes are high. It's the primetime game of the night.
Thunder Pacers, game 6 in Indianapolis tonight. And I thought this line would go up to 7 at some point. Didn't quite get there. The 6.5 started to disappear. And now down to 5.5 at Circa. At DraftKings, you can still grab a 6 if you like the Pacers. Total from 222.5 to 223. And Will Hill, you have some thoughts on Tyrese Haliburton and the Pacers point guard who's going to try to give it a go.
Yeah, now DraftKings won't let you parlay these, but we were just talking a little bit before the show, and I was just thinking this through. If you find a book, and there are some books out there, I know FanDuel, some of these other books, they let you parlay player props. If you're of the belief Haliburton is not 100% healthy, or you know what, he tries to play, he gives it a Willis Reed, and then he, you know, he can't go, or he re-aggravates it, whatever the case. His point total, point prop, 12.5, 13.5, depending on where you look. And then rebounds and assists, I think 6.5 and 4.5. Parlaying the unders, I don't think is a bad idea, just with the thought process that, you know what, he gets hurt early, or he's just ineffective. You could hit all three. You could hit a nice fat money line parlay piece here at, you know, 5-1, 6-1, in that range. If you get, you know, look, there's hold with these parlays. A lot of time the same game parlays or sucker bets, but there's a lot of correlation if you're playing the under points, rebounds, assists with Haliburton. So I don't think that's a bad play. I'm with you. I like the points with the Pacers. I think this team has been gritty and gutty all postseason. I don't think they'll go down without a fight. The number matters here. You could have gotten 7 at one point and then 6.5. So taking 6, 5.5, not a great exercise, but as it currently stands, plus the 6, I like the Pacers. I did bet the Pacers. I didn't get the 7. I didn't get the 6.5. I got stuck with a 6, which I'm not happy about. But I get the sense you're with me here taking Indy plus the points.
I did. I took Pacers 6.5 when it became evident that the number was not moving to 7. You could see the 6.5 start to disappear, and the line was dropping. I expected Tyrese Haliburton to try to play tonight. He was listed as questionable. He was going to be a game-time decision. But it's game 6 of the NBA Finals. We played the clip on the show 2 days ago where Haliburton said, if I can walk, I'm going to try to play. I don't blame him. You know, this is one of the biggest games of your career, if not the biggest. And you can't sit on the sideline in a game like this. If you think you're healthy enough to help the team, you need to get out there and give it a shot. So apparently it's been reported by multiple outlets that Haliburton will play, will start. And Coach Rick Carlisle said he's going to be monitored throughout the game, but he's not under a minute's restriction. So it's basically based on how he plays, if he's helping the team. And we'll see how many minutes T.J. McConnell gets tonight, because he was obviously a spark plug and played better for the Pacers in Game 5 in Oklahoma City early this week. All right, that game is a little more than an hour away, about an hour and 20 minutes away. Dan Karpik is going to be on with us to tip off hour number 2 to talk about player props for tonight's NBA game. And Chuck Esposito of the Red Rock Sportsbook joins us to talk about the action right before tip-off. That's at 5 and 5:15 p.m. Pacific, respectively. And Ian Cameron comes up here in about 15 or 20 minutes. We're going to talk Canadian Football League and recap the Stanley Cup Final with the kid, the Canadian kid, Ian Cameron. Quick break here on VSIN Primetime, the Sports Betting Network.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Pacers try to extend the series tonight. Right now, 5.5-point underdogs, total of 222.5 here at Circus Sports. Thunder want to close it out, but they have some margin for error tonight because they can get Game 7 in Oklahoma City on Sunday night if they come up short tonight. OKC up, obviously, 3-2 in the series. Last Friday night, Will, Pacers had a chance to go up 3-1. They had a 10-point lead in the second half. And you and I pretty much on the same page. We were talking about it at the time. Pacers blew that game, and I thought they blew the series when they blew that game. I think you agreed, right?
I do. I just think when you're the lesser team and you're facing a heavy favorite like OKC, you're up 10 in your building, you got a shot in the fourth quarter to take a commanding lead. You can't let it slip through your fingers. They stole one in OKC. They stole home court advantage. Mm-hmm. To give it back like that and put yourself in a position where you're 2-2 and then 5's on the road, 7's on the road, it's very dicey. That being said, I'm very curious what you think about this. I know you like the Pacers plus the points. You bet the Pacers plus the points. Any thought of taking the Pacers on the money line? And FanDuel does have the Pacers 12-1 to rally and win the series. Now, I don't think they're winning the series, but a lot of books, 9-1, 10-1, a 12-1 for a team that has game 6 at home, then game 7, who knows? Anything can happen. You get a lead, you can hedge. Is 12-1, is that enough for you to think about it? If I was on the fence of betting that, which direction would you nudge me?
I don't think the Pacers are going to win game 7 in OKC, so I would say no. I thought they blew the series last Friday night. They're not going to win it. And first of all, I'm in a bit of a different position because I bet OKC in 6 at plus 450 and OKC in 7 at 5-1 odds before the series. I think the Pacers with the points tonight got a chance – for that thing to fall in the middle. If not, I still got OKC at 5-1 to win game 7, which is a good spot to be in. I was trying to find a way, what's the best way to bet a big favorite going into an NBA final series like this? I was confident the Pacers could extend the series. They weren't going to get steamrolled like a lot of people believe. If you listen or watch this network every day, you would have thought OKC was just going to sweep these bums out and it was going to be 4 games and done. Maybe 5, maybe the Pacers get a game. I thought they could make this a serious series. But anyway, you take a minus 700 series favorite and you flip it to plus 450 and 5-1 if they can win in 6 or 7. I thought that was the best way to bet the series. I do not think the Pacers are going to win game 7 if they win tonight. Yes, I do think the Pacers are live tonight. And in fact, you know, when we're talking about the live betting during this game tonight, I fully expect the Pacers to have some sort of first quarter lead or first half lead. I think they're going to come out like bats out of hell tonight. They're going to be fired up. That crowd's going to be off the hook. Probably the way you'd want to play if you like OKC tonight, instead of laying the 220 or 205 on the money line, what's out there in the market, is play OKC on a cheap money line price when the Pacers get a lead tonight. I do believe the Pacers are going to have a lead, you know, a significant lead at some point in the first half. This is not going to be thunder wire to wire. So that's the advantage you have of live betting here tonight is, you know, don't lay the 205, 210, 220. Look to try to get OKC at a cheaper price if you do think they're going to win it. I was watching this network a little bit today, and I heard multiple predictions. Thunder going to close it out tonight, you know, no problem. Well, I think there's better ways to bet it than laying the 5.5 or 6 or laying the 210, and live betting would be the way to go. Pacers, I think, have just turned the ball over too many times, Will, for them to, again, win that game 7 in OKC. I'm going to go back to game 5 in Oklahoma City. Pacers had 22 turnovers. And that's why I kind of like him tonight. They had 22 turnovers in that game, but they shot 45% from the field, which is good. They were getting the shots they wanted, and they were making the shots when they weren't turning the ball over like a bad high school girls team. You know, it's Andrew Nembhard driving the lane, jumping up in the air, and throwing the ball back over his head to lead a Thunder fast break. There were so many careless, unforced errors on the part of the Pacers guards. I don't think you're going to see that discombobulated type of play from the Pacers' backcourt tonight. But I don't trust them at all when they get back into Game 7 in OKC on Sunday, if that's the situation. You've been watching the NBA for a long time, like I have. Home teams just don't lose Game 7s, Will. It just doesn't happen, right?
No. My only thought with betting that or contemplating betting that would be you think they have a chance tonight. And like you said about getting a lead in certain games, let's just say they won tonight and had a 6-7 point lead at some point in game seven early. Then all of a sudden you can really, find a nice money line on the Thunder and walk away with a profit. Not that I think the Pacers are winning both of these. I just thought 12-1 to win two straight games when one of them is at home, I thought was interesting. Haven't bet it, didn't bet it, probably won't. I just thought the 12-1, I did a little bit of a double take when I saw that price at 12-1.
Yeah, I really think I can understand what you're saying here and trying to monetize that bet and put yourself in a good position. I'm not going to discourage it. I'm not going to be surprised if the Pacers win this game tonight. I think it's going to be down to the wire, similar to what we watched on Friday night when it was a tight game in the last 2 minutes and somehow the Pacers lost by 7 with a bunch of bonehead plays in the final 2 minutes. But I think this game is going to be tight. I fully expect it to the wire. Not going to be surprised if the Pacers win it, but just in case, you know, you take those points as insurance, especially when you've got OKC to win the series. Take the 6.5, and if it falls in the middle and OKC wins a tight game, you're more than happy with that result tonight. Did you play any Tyrese Haliburton props? I know you were talking about parlaying it, and DraftKings took some of that down. I think the DraftKings take all the Haliburton numbers down or just did not allow you to parlay it.
The second one, they left them up, but you can't parlay them. You can't parlay anything. Points of assists under, points, rebounds under. They're all you got to make them straight bets. A couple offshore, and I know BetMGM does let you parlay them. So I would recommend that if you just want a little action on the game. I think it's heavily correlated. I think there's a reasonable chance Haliburton takes the court and is either ineffective or re-injures it, re-aggravates it, can't go, whatever. I mean, think about the famous Willis Reed game. Willis Reed had 4 points in that game. He came in, had a little adrenaline, made a couple shots, and that's basically all he could do. I mean, who knows the extent of Halliburton's injury, but you're getting a fat payout if you're of the belief that Haliburton is going to give it a go, which we know he is, but he just can't be effective, and maybe he can't even finish the game. And if you wanted to really get greedy, you throw in some McConnell overs, thinking he's going to be the beneficiary, 10.5 points, shop around for his numbers, obviously, but if you're looking to go that route, maybe you can really cash in on the fact that Haliburton's not healthy. He's going to play. Now, the numbers account for it somewhat. 12.5, that wouldn't be his number if he's healthy, obviously. But let's just say he plays 6-7 minutes and he just can't go, or he aggravates, or he was as bad as he was the other night. Who knows? Maybe McConnell eats up those minutes and you can really hit a long shot parlay with McConnell overs and Haliburton unders.
Let's hear from Tyrese Haliburton talking about the injury timeline on his calf and his ankle. He's got a strained calf and a sore ankle going into game 6 tonight.
Nothing more than you've already seen. I practiced today, did what I could. I know coach just told you guys what the process will be tomorrow for me to play. And, yeah, we're just taking it from there.
All right, now let's hear from Rick Carlisle talking about Halliburton's impact in Game 5. When we were curious, why did Carlisle play Halliburton for 34 minutes when he made zero field goals, scored a total of 4 points, and seemed to be hurting the team?
Well, he was in there when we got it to two. We cut it to two. And then what happened there was we had a good defensive possession. We overhelped and gave up a second shot, and it turned into a three. And then we had an untimely turnover at the other end, and that turned into a breakaway dunk. And then all of a sudden, boom, it was seven again. So, you know, this is not related to Tyrese, but, you know, it's the two things right now that are really bothersome and challenging for us is the second shot rebounds and the turnover. So we're going to do our best to address those things. But as far as Tyrese, you know, he'll go through the day tomorrow. We're our prep session's tomorrow, late afternoon. And they'll get together and do some testing, and that will determine whether he plays or not. And if he doesn't play, we have a plan, obviously, if we're without him.
I feel like the Pacers could win with or without Halliburton tonight. And if he plays effectively in the first half, I'm sure Carlisle is going to stick with him, but we'll see how productive he can be in the first quarter tonight. Betting on sports, if you are, why not try the races? First Bet lets you wager on hundreds of horse races every day from top tracks across the U.S. and around the world. Sign up at firstbet.com. Firstbet.com, that's the number one. STBet.com. Use promo code VSIN200 to claim a 20% rebate for your first 60 days up to $200. Go to firstbet.com today. Will Hill, I talked with Pimlico Frank Carulli, who was on our show. And remember, he predicted the exact outcome, the exact order of the Belmont finish a couple weeks ago. Pimlico Frank had Sam Bennett 150-1 odds to win the Conn Smythe. He bet it way back. How about that? Nice cash for him.
Raising Cane's on him, man. That's a hell of a hit. 150-1. That'll pay the bills. Jeez.
When we come back, the Canadian kid, Ian Cameron, joins the show. We'll talk hockey, Canadian Football League, and more with the kids. Stay tuned to VSIN Primetime.
This is VSIN Primetime on VSIN, the sports betting network.
All right, let's go north of the border. Ian Cameron, the Canadian kid, joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. And Ian, did you wake up today depressed thinking about the three-decade drought for Canada in the Stanley Cup after the Edmonton Oilers go down in six games to the Florida Panthers? How do you feel about it?
No, I was not that depressed about it, Matt. I'm more depressed that I took Edmonton to win the series, and it had nothing to do with the Canadian Cup drought or wanting that to end. It was just a thought that, you know, that Connor McDavid, the so-called greatest player in the world and in the sport for the last decade, like Crosby before him, like Gretzky before him, would be able to win his first cup beating the team he lost to the previous year. And unfortunately, that did not happen, like Wayne Gretzky when he beat the Islanders in 1984 after losing in 83 to them, or like Sidney Crosby in 2009 when he and the Penguins beat Detroit after losing to them the previous year. That did not happen for Connor McDavid. And why did it not happen? Because Florida's just the better, deeper, stronger, faster team. It's really that simple. Four lines that just came at them in waves, just an incredible blue line. The defense was suffocating. Better goaltending from Sergei Bobrovsky than the Skinner-Picker duo. And Florida, this is an impressive three-year run that they've been on. Even the year they lost to Vegas in the Cup Final before the back-to-back Stanley Cup championships. There's been a strong 3 years for this team. They've got some big question marks. Can they bring Sam Bennett, Brad Marchand, Aaron Ekblad, three massive pieces to this team as far as bringing them these Stanley Cups? They're all unrestricted free agents. Bill Zito, the GM, seems to think he's got a chance. Easier said than done. They all want the money or are going to want a pay upgrade, but certainly the culture that has been developed in Florida has certainly been special to watch.
Ian Cameron with us. Follow him at Bobano Betts. And Will Hill, I think you were going to pepper Ian Cameron with a hockey question about Sam Bennett, right?
Yeah, Bennett was a guy that cashed a lot of tickets for people at Veasan at long shot numbers. We just looked at the voting. I didn't realize this till now. I meant to look at it, but 75-68 in terms of points, Bennett versus Marchand. So if you had Marchand at long shot tickets, man, close but no cigar. Did you agree with that? Whose vote would you have given it to in terms of the Conn Smythe here?
I got in on Bennett to win the Conn Smythe as well, but I only got in at plus 25, 2,600 it was before the Stanley Cup final started. I know there's people that had it way before the final started at an even better price, but I still got, obviously, you know, a better price than you would have gotten going into game six where he was the, what, minus 200 to minus upwards of minus 400 in some spots, you know, favorite to win the Conn Smythe. And the way the NHL does it is different than the NBA. In the NBA, if, let's say OKC wins tonight, the MVP award is the NBA Finals MVP. So it's based on the performance in the championship series that determines it. With the Conn Smythe trophy in the NHL playoffs, it's a playoff MVP award. So the entire body of work for that player in the Stanley Cup playoffs, all four rounds, is taken into account. So I'm not trying to say that, I'm not saying that Sam Bennett was the right decision because I had money on it. I'm saying it was the right decision because based on the definition of the Conn Smythe trophy, playoff MVP, not Stanley Cup final MVP, I think it deserves to go to Sam Bennett, who led the playoffs in goals. If it was a Stanley Cup final MVP award, guys, absolutely Brad Marchand. No question about it with the incredible series he had. But I think because it's classified as a playoff MVP award, you have to give it to Sam Bennett, and they did.
Ian, let's switch gears here. CFL, NBA almost over, NHL almost over. CFL is going to not quite take center stage, but it's going to become more popular, more bet on here. We're through a couple weeks. Any takeaways, any teams you think are better than you expected, worse than you expected? What have you seen so far in the CFL?
Well, I think one of the biggest takeaways is, I know this is regarding one of the teams playing tonight to get week three started. If it keeps going this way, they might have locked up the East Division by late August, early September at this point, and there will still be like 2 months left in the season at that point. And I'm talking about the Montreal Alouettes. They are 2-0 in that East Division, and every other team in the East is 0-2. And every other team looks like they have very real problems. Toronto doesn't have Chad Kelly. He's still injured. Nick Arbuckle has looked terrible to begin the year. They've lost so much on defense. They're now going to be without their best defensive player this week. Hamilton has lost, you know, defense still a problem. Bo Levi Mitchell at quarterback not playing like he did for a big part of last year. So Hamilton, which had a bad year last year, is struggling as well. And Ottawa, you know, they have Drew Brown injured and they still can't get a stop on defense. So Montreal by default could run away with this division. They look awesome. And that's one of the biggest take a complete team, defense, offense, special teams. They've had a defensive touchdown in each of the first 2 weeks. Davis Alexander, their quarterback, 6-0 as a starter in the CFL, including the times he filled in for Fajardo last year. Montreal looks like a complete team and a tough one to deal with right now.
2-0 for Montreal, two decisive victories. They're laying 7 tonight, total 48.5. Are you laying the points? Are you finding another way to back Montreal? What are your thoughts here for this game?
Yeah, the numbers climbed on this one. Obviously, people impressed with Montreal. People still have questions about Edmonton. We only have one piece of evidence for Edmonton. They lost in week one to BC. It was competitive for through the halftime, and then the defense kind of fell apart. And Nathan Rourke and the BC offense pretty much picked apart Edmonton's defense in the second half. So they're 0-1. They had a bye week last week. Of course, in the CFL, nine teams. One team is going to have a bye week every week. It's just the way it is. And Edmonton had theirs last week. So extra time to prepare, but they do have a rookie CFL head coach, Mark Killam, who's been a special teams coordinator for many years. Now the head coach of this Elks team. I think it's going to be still room for improvement from this team. They have a very athletic quarterback in Trey Ford, who is one of these classic, you know, type of quarterbacks where he can run, and he can't throw. And we've seen this instance in the NFL a lot where the quarterback's mobile and athletic, but worry about his accuracy in the pocket. And that's what we're seeing a bit with Trey Ford. You know, two interceptions in that loss against BC. He's still got room for improvement. Like I said, Montreal looks like a complete team right now. You know, I don't love the number at 7 right now, and I don't love the spot for Montreal, 2 games in a row on the road, but I don't trust the Edmonton defense. So I played the team total here with Montreal, over 27.5. Try to shop around, see if you can get it below the key number of 28, but Montreal has scored 28 points or more in each of their first 2 games. And the beauty of betting a Montreal team total is they can score on defense too. They've had a defensive touchdown in each of the first 2 games. They're a great ball hawking group on that side of the ball. So I played it with Alouette's team total over, and a smaller bet on the over here, because if Edmonton's going to cover, it's probably because they're going to move the ball on offense. I do worry about that defense, which has a lot of talent, but I think it's going to take weeks for that unit to gel and come together.
Ian Cameron, the Canadian kid, Bobano Betts. You want to follow him on Twitter? And Ian, if you want to watch tonight's game, Montreal Alouettes at Edmonton Elks. I remember the good old days when they were the Eskimos. Montreal Edmonton tonight. I think that game is on CBS Sports, CBS Sports Network. Is that correct?
Yeah, and it's a good week for U.S. viewers of the CFL, because 3 of the 4 games are on CBS Sports Network.
Yeah.
This week they got the game tonight and both games on Saturday, the doubleheader, 1 p.m. Pacific and 4 p.m. Pacific, both games Saturday on CBS Sports Network as well.
All right, let's take a look. We got about 2.5 minutes left here, so quick handicaps on your other plays. Let's take a look at Ian Cameron's best bets here for CFL Week 3. When he talks CFL, you want to listen. He's as sharp as it gets. Alouette's team total over 27.5. Smaller play tonight on the over 48. How about the Saskatchewan-Toronto game on Friday night with Saskatchewan Rough Riders? Let's see, laying 3.5, total of 48. How'd you play that game?
Yeah, so it says on the screen Saskatchewan minus 170, because that's probably the best widely available money line price out there right now. I know early in the week I laid minus 140. I think you can still lay minus 170. I would at this point, just because I think Saskatchewan is the better team. Now, it is 2 road games east in a row for them. No, I didn't really like that spot initially, but Toronto is banged up like crazy. Tons of injuries, both sides of the ball. Their best defensive player, Wynton McManus, will not play. Nick Arbuckle has struggled. 2 touchdowns, 4 interceptions ratio. Not good through 2 games. The O-line has had protection issues. I think it's just trouble against this Saskatchewan team. 0-2 straight up, 0-2 against the spread start for the Argos. And I don't think it's going to get any easier for a very injury-riddled team. So I like Saskatchewan there in that one.
How about Saturday Night Football, Winnipeg Blue Bombers at BC Lions? And looks like you're going to play the home dog, right?
Yes, even though Nathan Rourke is unlikely to play. He got injured in the game against Winnipeg last week. Bombers won that game 34-20. It's a rematch this week. Jeremiah Masoli will get the start. He's a CFL veteran. He's been around for a very long time in this league. He's been in the program a while. I think they can coach him up. He's been taking all the reps this week. He'll play better. I don't trust Winnipeg on the road. Zach Collaros will play after Strevler played so well. Collaros was suspended last week, but Collaros got off to a slow start, and so did Winnipeg on the road. 0-4 on the road to start last year. I think it's a tough spot for them going on the road, laying points here against BC. I think Masoli can play well enough for the Lions, and I'll take them with the hook plus 3.5 at home.
All right, Ian Cameron. Appreciate the knowledge, dropping the knowledge on the CFL, and best of luck this weekend.
Good to be with you guys. Enjoy the weekend.
All right, here we go.
Thanks,
Ian. CFL Week 3 about to kick off, a little over an hour away from Montreal and Edmonton on CBS Sports Network. Nobody's going to be watching the NBA Finals game tonight.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Pascal Siakam had 28 points in the Pacers' 120-109 Game 5 loss in Oklahoma City. Siakam's been a player that the Pacers have gone to with a lot of success during this series. And actually, if you're going to play any player props tonight, Siakam over would be one to look at. Will Hill, you and I talked about that before Game 5, and Siakam put up 28 in that game, so that paid off. But 3 games in a row, he scored 20 or more. Taking advantage of some mismatches when the Thunder put smaller defenders on him, really they don't have a defender who can lock down Siakam, and he's been really effective in this series. 9, 6, and 8 field goals made in the last 3 games. But that prop number is jacked up tonight. Siakam here at circa 20.5 points. I see 21.5 out there at DraftKings. So you're not getting a bargain. You're not getting that 17 or 18.5 you were getting early in the series. You would think Siakam's going to put up bigger numbers if Halliburton is not that effective tonight. Let's hear Rick Carlisle, Pacers coach, talking about Tyrese Halliburton and how active he has been in practice.
Yeah, he participated in all our walkthrough stuff. So, but it's a walkthrough, so it's not. There was no real running or moving or anything. So, so we'll see. See how where we are tomorrow. It's a topic that's people want to hear about and know about, and there's going to be a lot of questions about it. But we will not really know for sure until late tomorrow afternoon or early evening. We did a 30-minute walkthrough. We did about 25 minutes of film, then a 30-minute walkthrough, and he was able to do both of those things.
Well, he was able to watch film and do a walkthrough, so he's good to go. No, I think it's been pretty obvious since game five that if Halliburton, and even judging by what he said after that game, if he was able to walk, if he thought he could run and help the team, he was going to be out there Thursday night in game six, and that's what we expect. He is going to play tonight. He's going to start. Rick Carlisle is going to see how effective he is, so no minutes restriction, but Halliburton is going to give it a go tonight. No surprise there. I expected him to play just because of the magnitude of the game. It's not a serious injury. Will, I feel like the Pacers can win or cover with or without Halliburton, but it would certainly help if he's effective tonight.
It certainly would. I'm curious what you think. If you think that the injury is not that significant, would that lend you to going over his 12.5? Because this number, he's relatively healthy. It's a cheap number, the 12.5 points, or is there too much uncertainty and you wouldn't pull the trigger one way or another on a player?
Well, like you and I were talking about earlier, it's a little bit risky too, right? What if he gets out there and that supposed strained calf gets aggravated?
Sure.
And he's not effective and you got over 11.5 or 12.5 and he's not going to get the minutes to get over that number. So it's a bit risky. You could say, well, you're buying cheap at that low number, but you're also assuming that he's going to stay on the floor tonight. He played 34 minutes in game five, which I didn't understand. When he was that ineffective with zero field goals made, 4 points, turning the ball over, why Rick Carlisle left him out there so much. But he did. If he played 34 minutes a few days ago, I think he can probably play 25 tonight. But we'll see. On the flip side, we don't hear much from Mark Daigneault, the OKC coach. So let's hear from him about how you prepare for the Pacers when you don't know if their point guard's going to play.
Halliburton's a great player. One thing we know is you don't underestimate great players. So in the case that he plays, we're expecting his best punch. Indiana's a great team. We don't underestimate great teams. So in either case, whether he plays or not, we're expecting Indiana's best punch, especially at home. And so we'll be prepared for the best punch from both him and the team.
Hey, well, let's flip this to an OKC perspective here and look at that side of the story here for a minute. Jalen Williams, 40 points, bust out game in game five. SGA had 31. He went to the free throw line 14 times. Williams went to the free throw line 12 times. This is an absurd number of free throws shot by the Thunder in that game. They were also 14 for 32 from three. And they're not that good a three-point shooting team. Came into the finals at 33%. In the playoffs, shot 44% in game five. Will, can we expect a little regression tonight from Jalen Williams and maybe the Thunder's three-point shooting?
Yeah, I would think so. Like you said, haven't been a good three-point shooting team, haven't been a good road team. Last time we saw him on the road, we were doing the game four Friday night, only three makes from beyond the arc, only 17 attempts. So is it a road thing? Did they figure something out in game five? I am a believer in the cliche. It's a cliche for a reason. The role players are going to play a lot better at home than on the road. The Aaron Wiggins of the world, they're going to give you know, he's given them four or five made threes in some of these home games. He's given them basically nothing in the road games. So I think the road struggles, the three-point struggles on the road, those are things to consider. It's funny because you and I watch a lot of college basketball. You're a very sharp college basketball handicapper. I remember watching Santa Clara and Jalen Williams, and Williams 40 points the other night. Great defensive game. I mean, that's a great NBA Finals game. 40 points with good defense is it's hard to get better than that. I thought that he was a player I liked in college. I said, oh, man, this guy could play in the NBA. Never did I think, and I'm curious what you think, 3 years later, 4 years later, whatever it is, it's only 2022 he was drafted. Mm-hmm. This is going to be possibly the second best player on a title team. So it's remarkable watching Santa Clara all those times that, you know, this budding superstar was just, you know, right there in front of us.
Well, that's interesting that you brought that up. I was thinking about it a couple of days ago because I knew Jalen Williams at Santa Clara. He's a very good player on the West Coast, and I thought he could play in the NBA. Didn't think he would be a star like this. So, no, I didn't project him to be a guy who's going to score 40 in a finals game. I remember also when Damian Lillard was at Weber State, you know, kind of a similar comparison. I knew Lillard was going to be a really good NBA player. You could see it. Jalen Williams, not sure. You know, the Thunder took two Jalen Williams in the same draft. Jalen Williams from Santa Clara and Jalen Williams from Arkansas, spelled first name spelled a little bit differently. I'm not sure the Thunder knew which one was going to be the better player. Turns out to be the one from Santa Clara who bust out for 40. And there's been a little buzz about maybe he could win NBA Finals MVP. I don't think so, Will. I think you could probably lay the price with SGA and cash your ticket, right? I don't think you can steal that Finals MVP from SGA, can you?
Yeah, I mean, it's not as simple as, because, you know, going into last game, basically SGA's Finals MVP price had mirrored whatever the Thunder title price, series price was. That's changed a little bit where you got to give him, like, I don't know, Williams, what, 10, 15% chance maybe to win it, but not enough to bet, not enough at the odds, not if you were able to snag whatever, 40, 50 to 1 prior. That's a different conversation, but at the current number, not enough for me. Ty usually goes to the superstar in these scenarios. SGA has done plenty. Rescued him in game four, had that brilliant fourth quarter where he scored 15 points. So I'd be shocked, barring something unforeseen. I'd be pretty, not even surprised, shocked if anybody other than SGA on the Thunder won, including Williams, who's the only other candidate. So no, I don't see a path for Williams realistically to win this award, barring something, you know, really unexpected. And, you know, going back to that Santa Clara team, they had Jalen Williams and they had Pajemski, Brandon Pajemski, who plays for the Warriors. Amazing that team couldn't do more when you look at what they have in terms of NBA talent.
No kidding. Pajemski can shoot it, and he helped the Warriors quite a bit this season. Jalen Williams was the 12th overall pick in that 2022 draft. And I remember at the time saying, wow, 12th pick, I didn't expect him to go that high. But obviously OKC's doing a great job of scouting players and developing talent, and that's part of the reason – big reason they're one win away from winning the NBA Finals. Let's hear from Mark Dagno again, talking about how to prepare his team mentally when you're one win away.
Hopefully we have that habit built. You know, that's really the way we look at all these things, is there's no new material right now, you know, and so we're always trying to put ourselves in the opponent's shoes, understand what the opponent's going to bring to the game, prepare for our opponent's best punch in every situation. Zero and zero mindset, despite what's going on in a series or last game or whatever. You know, we're not introducing any new concepts right now. We're just leaning on the psychological habits we've tried to build over a long period of time.
Well, I don't think we've talked about this enough. You made one mention of it earlier. OKC Thunder was 0-8 against the spread on the road before that fluke cover in Indianapolis last Friday night. You still think that the Thunder have something to prove here on the road, right? Because they have not haven't played well, haven't covered numbers, but just really haven't played all that well on the road in the playoffs.
They haven't. Now, give them credit for this. They've answered two huge tests, down 2-1 in Denver game four, down 8 in the fourth quarter, down 2-1 against the Pacers, down 10 in the fourth quarter. They won both those games, but we're not talking about winning the games. We're talking about winning and winning with margin. For that, for them to be laying 6, 6.5 points in these games where they haven't played well on the road, it's just a number I can't get to. So they've answered the test, and look, they're, you know, 48 minutes away. These questions, are they too young? Do they have a second great player, a second star? 48 minutes, one win away from answering those questions forever, but I can't lay this number with them on the road.
Taking the points with the Pacers, expecting OKC to win the series in 6 or 7, but I think we're going to get a thriller tonight. I was going to say an instant classic, but I don't know if it'll be that good. But we should get a down-to-the-wire game in Indianapolis, and we're about an hour and a half away from tip-off. Dan Karpik is the NBA player prop analyst at VSiN. He's going to join us next. And Chuck Esposito from Behind the Book at the Red Rock Sportsbook. Stay tuned, the Sports Betting Network.